Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gators Breakdown, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters. You can find me on social media at GatorDave_SEC. And hey, we got kind of unique, but not so unique because we do this about once or twice a year anyway. But back on this episode, Will Miles, of course, ReadandReaction.com, and also Nick Knudsen from Read and Reaction joining us right here on Gators Breakdown. We usually do it before the spring, after spring, all that, but get the trio back together right here on this episode of Gators Breakdown. Lots to get into. We'll look back at spring, but of course, the transfer portal opening on this Tuesday as we record, and this seems like it was a little slow start to the day, but like the last 5 hours has just been nothing but portal stuff, like going crazy. So we'll get into all that, catch you up as best we can. Some of this will probably be old by the time you listen to it just because it's moving so fast. But Will, Nick, guys, Read and Reaction, thanks for hopping on right here.
Yeah, man, good to be here. Always good to be on Gators Breakdown. And, obviously with the portal going on, never a dull moment. When you chose that, Dave, I'm not sure you knew what you were getting into, but when you chose never a dull moment in Gator Nation, I'm not sure you knew what you were getting into, but it has become the moniker for the program in the last decade or so.
Yeah. I always have time for Gator Dave when Gator Dave comes calling, for sure. So it's good to be back, Dave. I would say the last few times we've done this in January and getting a feel for the roster in January is pretty difficult. And I was like, okay, it's after spring ball. This should be better timing. It might be more difficult right now with the portal. We'll see what happens in the next few days. But certainly I know Florida's already had a name or two pop up. I'm sure we'll see a few more in the next few days, and it's going to look a little different.
Yeah, that's funny too, because I'll throw a shout out to you guys. You guys are working on a preseason magazine. I mean, you got to kind of delay a little bit now because you got to see what the next 2 weeks hold. So it's just like, oh, man. But I mean, at least, you'll be updated and everything will be out there for Gator fans to take part of, to take from your preseason magazine. But it does kind of throw a little wrench into the plan a little bit with this 2 week window that is expected to be pretty crazy.
It is difficult to write things too far in advance with the magazine. We're dragging a few sections out for sure. That's definitely for sure.
It's definitely always a race to the finish in May when it comes to getting that done. Nick and I don't sleep a whole lot in the next month or so.
All right, yeah. So guys, there we go. You know what's coming up. Transfer portal. We'll talk Manny Nunnery entering the portal, some transfer portal targets that have kind of leaked out a little bit today on this Tuesday, and then we'll look back at spring and all that good stuff. So hit that like button. Give us all those likes right there on the YouTube version. Subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. Get those notifications when there's a new Gators Breakdown. Your support goes a long way. And, of course, I threw a preview up this morning, Gators Breakdown Plus chat we had last night with Gators Breakdown Plus members. So check that out after this episode. There's a nice little chat there. Some of that news is old already because we did talk about Manny Nunnery last night in the chat. So some of that's old, but you get those extra episodes, ad-free episodes, access to the Discord, all that good stuff. Link is in the description to join Gators Breakdown Plus. And also an announcement from Florida Victorious. Next week, April 23rd, a live Q&A session with quarterbacks, Graham Mertz, DJ Lagway, hosted by Chris Doering, all that on Florida Victorious. That should be a pretty good time there with the quarterbacks for the orange and blue. Take advantage right now. Get 20% off your first month at Florida Victorious with promo code GatorsBD. Link is in the description to join. Last week, you guys got to get on the field after the orange and blue game. This time, it'll be virtual with the quarterbacks hosted by Chris Doering. So it should be a pretty good time there at Florida Victorious. So, all right, guys, let's get to it. Manny Nunnery enters the transfer portal again. He flirted with it in the winter portal cycle, only to pull himself out, go through spring practice at Florida, then puts himself back in just a couple of days later. Florida doing all the exit interviews after spring right now. Will, you shared, I won't steal the thunder there, but you shared a little Instagram post that we saw on Twitter from Mannering Nunnery. Didn't seem too pleased with maybe the direction things were going on defense, but you know, got all kinds of opportunity this spring with some of the injuries Florida was fighting with Shamar James and Derek Wingo. Pup Howard comes in. I'm sure that plays a big part in Mannering Nunnery transferring here, because Pup Howard probably came in and took the spot right away. But Mannering Nunnery came in 1 year. So, you know, didn't really get to play a whole lot. They moved him around a bit last year, played some nickel, played some linebacker there for the Gators last year. But Mannering Nunnery in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, I think we sort of expected some turnover on the roster. I'm not sure Nunnery was the guy I necessarily targeted to start with, mainly because he was such a standout on special teams when he was at Houston, and he figured with all the struggles that Florida's had on special teams that Nunnery would be somebody who at least would be able to contribute there. But we didn't really see that last year. Now, is that because the staff wasn't able to take advantage of his skills, or is that because Nunnery wasn't able to get on the field? But I think you hit it there with Grayson Howard. You know, it's hard to tell in the spring game, but you could tell pretty readily that Howard's probably going to be a pretty good player. And look, Nunnery played last year a fair amount, especially after Shamar James went down, and he didn't play great. I mean, when you start looking at like Pro Football Focus rankings or just generally what was happening with the linebackers, it wasn't like he came in and made everything raise a level or even two when he was in there. It was just, you know, he was sort of filling up space. And the reality is Florida doesn't have the ability right now to put guys out on the field who are below average. And so if they think they can go out and get somebody either in the spring portal, or if they just think Howard's going to be able to step into that role, I can understand why they would tell him that. And then, you know, obviously he has to make a decision that's best for himself, and hopefully he goes someplace, is able to latch on. And, you know, hopefully we're not ruining that Mannering Nunnery is like, you know, lights out at Texas A&M or something in about 6 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, we saw all those other defenders going to Texas A&M. Yeah, but hey, but Nick, look, I mean, Shamar James, Pup Howard probably look to be the top two linebackers when fall camp rolls around. You got inexperienced Derek Wingo, RJ Moten moves into the linebacker room, and of course, young players Jaden Robinson, true freshman Miles Graham, Aaron Childs. So, numbers wise, Florida's probably still pretty good here.
Probably better than they've been in some time. I think that's my main takeaway from the spring overall, for all the negativity around the program in terms of the schedule and what it's been the last couple of years. Is Billy Napier on the hot seat? All those topics that have been covered to no end during this offseason. You really look at this roster and say it is deeper than it's been in some time in certain positions. Although I would not be saying no to a solid linebacker here in the transfer portal, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, there's you know what? Perfect segue. We'll move to the portal needs for Florida. We'll get some of these targets, but get your guys' thoughts. And I think this is pretty blanket across Gator Nation, but maybe where you rank these positions as far as need goes for the Gators, we'll get into it. But wide receiver, of course, even after the spring, you did bring in Chimere Dike, but at the same time, still got questions if there's a downfield threat for this Gator offense. And that, you know, the big body down the field, make a catch type of receiver, maybe tight end as well. We'll kind of see if, you know, if Florida loses anybody in the tight end room. And I think you got pretty good starters there. Still worried about the depth right now. Interior of the offensive line, and then defensive end, edge rusher, I think are some of the position groups that I'm looking at as far as Florida hitting the transfer portal. We'll get into some targets in just a second, but would you guys rank those in any kind of way? Wide receiver for me is going to be up there for sure. Interior of the offensive line maybe as well. Tight end I would have a little lower, because, you know, Florida does have a good bit of numbers there. I like Hanson, I like Boardingham, but if one of those guys go down, especially in the blocking side of it, with that Hanson provides, I got some concern at tight end for a blocking style of tight end. We'll get into that for a target in just a bit too. But wide receiver, tight end, interior offensive lineman, defensive line slash edge, any other position you guys would throw in there, or is that about it?
No, I think you pretty much have it covered, Dave. It was pretty obvious during the spring game that Trey Wilson was the star. And the question is going to be who can be his Robin to the Batman that he's putting out there. It was nice to see him go downfield to Wilson a little bit more, but the question is who's going to step up beside them. And you can't use him as a weapon horizontally and use him as a weapon vertically. And they used him as a horizontal weapon last year with Ricky Pearsall as the vertical weapon for the most part. They're going to have to find somebody to replace that. And I'm not sure we necessarily saw that this weekend. I think DK, okay, he was all right. Spirito was probably the most impressive wide receiver out there. And, you know, look, walk-ons at Florida, Doering said it himself on the broadcast that they have been known to excel. But if you look at Doering back when he caught 70 balls there for Florida, he had some guys named Ike Hilliard and Jacquez Green and Riddell Anthony there with him in the wide receiver room. And I think that's sort of what we're looking for, right? Is that Trey Wilson may end up being the guy who can put up 70 catches. The question is who's going to put up 50, who's going to put up 45, who's going to put up 40 right next to him. Is that guy in the room right now? I don't know that we got that answer this weekend. So I wouldn't be surprised if that's a place where Florida focuses, if for no other reason, just to bring in sort of to raise the floor, right? I mean, DK was that goal, I think, to sort of raise the floor overall. But we didn't see that, at least in the spring game. Whether that's happened over spring practice or not is something I think for other people to talk about.
Yeah, I still think, you know, a Marcus Burke or a oh, wow, Jesus Christ.
Frazier's.
Burke, Frazier's. Wow. Well, I'm so
Khalil blessed. Jackson is the name you're looking for, right?
Second year guy. Jesus Christ.
Myself.
Jesus. I don't ever do that. That's probably the first time I've blanked on a name in the 8 years I've done this podcast. But yeah, Burke, Myzel, those are the two guys I look at. If, you know, if somebody's on the roster that's going to push the ball down the field, those are the two candidates, you know, but still got to see it.
Man, Burke was a guy that coming out of Trinity Christian looked explosive as anything out from Jacksonville, but it just has not translated at Florida. So to say you count on it, I'd love to see it. I'd love to see it in action at some point. But if you give me one spot, Dave, you talk about what spots you want to see in the portal. If you give me one spot, I'd really like another solid offensive tackle option in case we saw when Barber went down last year how that looked. I thought couple of things we saw from Manuel out there, it's a little questionable. It is the spring game, not going to go too hard on a couple of reps there, but I think with the depth at that position is a huge concern for me if there is an injury. And then even the interior part of the defensive line, there's no other Cam Jackson out there. There's no, if we have an injury in a key spot or two, it's a different looking unit. So I'd like to see, obviously we got some young guys that can maybe fill in and step up. And but to count on that going into the season, I'd like to see another piece of experience come in there if you could.
Yeah, I know Dez Watson's name's brought up, but just can't seem to really break through. Slackman was on the other defense, and I like what he did in early portions of the Orange and Blue game. Of course, you'll have Slackman and Jackson together instead of two opposite teams, so that'd be a big plus. Jamari Lyons, of course, can he take a step from last year as well? Yeah, I can see. Or you can't have too many guys in the trenches, so whether it be the interior of the offensive line, interior of the defensive line. Certainly I can see that as well. But all right, let's go to some targets here, kind of cycling through social media today. Florida has made contact with former Colorado State wideout Justice Ross Simmons. Swamp 24/7 was the first one to break that. The rising junior, 71 catches, 1,148 yards, 6 touchdowns over the last 2 years, including 45 catches, 724 yards, with 3 touchdowns this past season. He started as a freshman for the Rams, and 26 passes, 424 yards, and 3 scores as a freshman back then. So Ross Simmons will have 2 years of eligibility remaining. He did tell Gators Online that he has a lot of interest in the Gators, may visit next week. Now, let's not forget, there might be a little connection there. Clay Millen, the transfer quarterback for the Gators, came from Colorado State, so maybe a little inroad there for the Gators in some communication behind the scenes. Hint, hint, wink, wink, tampering, but not with a player, so it doesn't count. But that's the way I'll spin it anyway. But there's a wide receiver target that, we're talking about going down the field, could be in the mix. But another one, maybe an even bigger name, Penn State receiver Keandre Lambert Smith. Lambert Smith was a prolific receiver for Penn State across four seasons, 126 catches, 1,721 yards, and 11 touchdowns. This past year led the team in receiving yards by more than 200 yards than anybody else. Career high 673 yards on 53 catches, four touchdowns. Skill, experience, is going to be highly sought after. Came out today, Georgia, Auburn, Texas A&M, Colorado, West Virginia have been confirmed to reach out to him. Going to be the top wide receiver in the portal right now. Florida's reached out as well. Early thought would be Georgia would be hard to beat. He's mentioned wanting to play with an experienced quarterback, but also a contender. So there's some names right there. And about an hour ago, right before we came on, not much more on him, but Houston wide receiver Sam Brown will enter the portal as well. 62 catches, 815 yards last season, three touchdowns. He is expected to be heavily pursued. So if we're looking for that outside receiver downfield threat, looks like wide receiver. there's some names already in day one of the transfer portal that, hey, those guys are – there's going to be some pursuing of some wide receivers. Hopefully Florida's in the mix for some of those guys.
Yeah, I'll say this. If we nab the guy from Colorado State, he's got the same spelling as Justice Boone. So we'll have two guys spell Justice. That's got to be – the only team in the country with that on the roster there. But yeah, he's tall, lean. Looks like he can push the ball downfield. I've only seen a little bit on him since he's a new entrant to the portal here. You know, Will, I can't think of a single time we've gone to Colorado State for football and regretted it.
that's not bad, Nick.
Little did I know we were going to Jim McElwain zing tonight.
Well, I don't know. Nick and I were going back and forth this week because Norby Williamson got fired from ESPN, and he looks just like McElwain. So okay. I was like, man, like maybe he was the guy on the shark. But so I think if you look at what Florida's done in the transfer portal this year, or guys they've gotten to flip. I mean, obviously they had Jameer Grimsley and Deontre Robinson, who they got to flip as signing day approached. Other than that, and other than Pup Howard, everyone is in their junior or senior season. And I think that's what you're seeing in terms of the targets that Florida has. And when you talk about the guys at wide receiver, I mean, the Penn State kid had to catch balls off of Drew Aller last year. And that guy is like really inaccurate, or at least was last year. And living up here in Penn State area, let's just say the spring game highlights of him just completely missing all of his receivers was really all I was seeing from any of my friends up in this area. So I think you look at the production that a kid like that has and say, hey, if you had a guy who could complete 70 to 75% of his throws, what could that do for you? Now, the problem is that Carson Beck also completed 70 to 75% of his throws. And, you know, look, I mean, as much as we hate to admit it, the reason that ETN went to Georgia, beyond some other things, is he wanted an opportunity to win. And so, you know, that is going to be a selling point if the price is the same at both places. And so that's the thing is I do wonder though, and Nick and I were talking about this a little bit last week, which is, you know, all the flips that Florida had for early signing day, does that mean there's more money in the coffers for these sorts of things when you find somebody that you want to go after? That's going to be an interesting question. I mean, it was one of the reasons I thought it was wise that Lane Kiffin hit the transfer portal before early signing day, because it meant that he hit before all these people missed out on guys and had free money to go out and pursue guys in the transfer portal. All of a sudden the price goes up. Well, you know, if everybody already sort of allocated their funds to signing day and then they allocated their funds to the fall transfer portal, then there might be some opportunities in the spring transfer portal. And I'm not saying it's a good thing that Florida had all those guys flip coming into early signing day, but it does change the overall calculus of the program and where you want to go. And the fact that they've focused this year on guys who can help this year, right? I mean, Pup Howard, we're talking about that guy maybe getting run as a starter, and he's the only guy who's not in his junior or senior season. Now, with COVID and all those other weird things that went on, some of these guys can stay for multiple years, have multiple years of eligibility, but still, you're getting a lot of experience. That's what they've really gone after in the transfer portal last year, whereas, you know, the year before, I think it was more guys like Deuce Spurlock, those sorts of guys who we looked at and said, that's a developmental prospect, probably not going to put a ton on tape in 2023. And that's what we saw. So really a huge focus on that senior class, junior class as well. And I think that's probably what we'll see continue on with the wide receivers.
I think also for this portal window, NIL is going to become a factor. And in this one, these guys are going to be heavily pursued. Like the, you know, I think you're going to see some of these, you know, top names in here. There's going to be a lot of competition for those guys. And kind of going to your point, Will, you may, hopefully you have saved some, because I think they're going to command a whole lot of attention, a whole lot of NIL dollars to go along with it, because this late in the game, they hold the cards right now. If you want these guys that bad, there's going to be a lot of other schools, I think, in the mix to get them. So, you know, they and look, with the portal, the way it works, and we talked about this too, most guys don't come in the portal without some, I think, pretty good idea of where they're going, and maybe a couple choices here or there. But there's, you know, there's been enough communication to know where they're about to be headed. As far as receiver goes, I wish we wouldn't even worry about this right now. If we go back to this, Florida wouldn't need to be in the mix if, you know, Liberty wide receiver C.J. Daniels, he was in the portal, ended up going to LSU in that winter portal cycle. So not only did Florida miss out on him in that window, he goes to a rival that you got to play every year. So now another big name, this might be, once you look at his film highlights, look his name up on YouTube after this, but Pitt edge rusher, defensive end, Deion Hayes. He's in the portal as a graduate transfer, 45 tackles, 10 and a half tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 4 pass breakups, and a forced fumble last season. For his career, 81 total tackles, 13 sacks, 26 and a half tackles for loss. I shared his highlight reel on Twitter about a couple hours ago. It's exactly what Florida needs in a pass rusher right now. Plays the run very well. By cutting off the edge, playing assignment football, gets in the backfield fast, shows aggression, shows nice work with push, hand work. I mean, just because of the position he plays and where Florida really needed to get some quarterback rushes last year, he's near the top of my list. But then I watched his YouTube highlights and, oh my, I said, sign me up right away. But, you know, if you look at this, and we mentioned defensive line a while ago, and we've mentioned, you know, edge a good bit throughout spring. You've had TJ Searcy as the up-and-comer guy. You got George Gums, who the staff sees a lot of potential in, but you know, there's nothing proven there yet. Can they prove it this year? Sure. But if you can get a guy like this to come in here and he puts up these stats for a Pitt defense that's had a pretty good reputation in the last handful of years, my guy Charlie, you know, Charlie Parch was coached his group, so I definitely want to reach out to him and see what he thinks about a player like this. But man, once you go watch the highlights, you'll see why I think he's going to be heavily pursued one day on Hayes.
Yeah, Pat Narduzzi knows how to produce defensive players and NFL prospects, that's for sure. Dave, the one thing I've been curious about seeing all this is there's been several names that Florida was very close with on the recruiting trail, and they were kind of in the last group. We've seen those guys pop in the portal. What are your expectations on reconnecting with some of those guys the way we did with Pup Howard?
I know Cormani's name is the one that popped in.
I didn't think about that one.
Yeah, that's probably the most polarizing name there. I think that I think the bridges have been burned there. Yeah. If you want to look at that. One that did from the state of Florida, USC has an offensive lineman, Jason, and I hope I'm not messing it up, Zandamela, Z-A-N-D-A-M-E-L-A. He's entered the portal from USC, former four-star, top 150 recruit. He's got 4 years left, so he's a young guy, kind of going to Will's point there. Most of the guys they've brought in so far have been experienced guys you want to play right away, but more likely interior offensive lineman. On three, Steve Wiltfong tweeted, Florida State, Miami, and Georgia initially schools to keep an eye on because he wants to be closer to home in Clearwater. So FSU was in his final list to begin with, but you know, now almost a year removed from that situation. But maybe he's because he's in the state of Florida. But as far as I'm trying to think of some other guys,
Peyton Kirkland was one that I saw hopped in as well. Yep.
Well, my thing is, he would be a developmental prospect as well, but since he's at Texas, I'm pretty sure they fall into the category now of being SEC, a quote SEC right. team, so he wouldn't be right. even to play next this coming right. up year. But if you're getting him for a developmental piece, then maybe it's kind of water under the bridge. But I would probably get a guy like, you know, Zandamela, who could probably come in here and at least contribute right away. But yeah, Kirkland, I forgot he was, he was another one, but I haven't heard much honestly in that regard too, if he'd even be a target.
Yeah, that is interesting. That is something that I was reading about the other day. The SEC, you cannot transfer. This is the cutoff, the spring portal. You're not eligible to play next year, SEC to SEC anymore. So I think there's a little bit of this is, I think the spring was the cutoff point, or after the winter portal was the cutoff point, I think. And so, you know, Jacoby Matthews from Texas A&M was another one of those guys that I believe we were in on. I think I saw Oregon, potentially FSU with him. So he's looking outside the SEC as well. But I thought it was interesting. A lot of those names we had saw in the recruiting cycle just a year or two ago, starting to see them pop back in the portal.
Yeah, well, another one, Miami, Trevante Sinison, the running back. Mm-hmm. He was another one that was, you know, Florida was in there on. And now, of course, he's at Miami, but I don't know the – he's originally from Louisiana, so the staff had a relationship with him for years. I don't know there, but, you know, I think Florida's got enough bodies at running back, so that would be kind of a stretch in my opinion.
Yeah, that's certainly one position you're not worried about the depth there, Will.
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, other than quarterback, have we really seen a guy who's like a giant impact player from the transfer portal going from one place to another? I mean, maybe there has been, but I can't pinpoint it in my mind. Some guy who transferred and just was an immediate star who wasn't a quarterback. And we've had quarterbacks transfer, and that I get, right? I mean, one, you can project those guys, and two,
you mean in general or at Florida?
I'm almost thinking in general, like who's a guy who jumps out in your mind as like wide receiver who transferred from one place to another and, you know, wasn't playing where he was at, transfers to another place and becomes an immediate star. Like,
You mean not really contributing before and then.
Yeah. I mean, look, I mean, if Luther Burden went to the transfer portal, I'd be like, yeah, obviously. Right. But that's not who's going in the transfer portal for the most part. Like the kid from Penn State you mentioned is a guy who's actually produced. There are a few people who have actually
Jameson produced. Jameson Williams.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I'll buy that. And Burton, just, I guess.
But to your point, they're few and far between.
Well, my point is that when you're looking at the transfer portal, I think you're looking to cover up holes more than you are looking to move your team to the next level, right? So your team has to be prepared to take that next step. If only you can plug the hole at, say, linebacker, or if only you can plug the hole at defensive end. Like, you're not getting that defensive end to be a difference maker. You're getting that defensive end so that your defensive end room isn't like incredibly deficient. Right. So if you think about what happened at Florida last year, Shamar James goes down, Scooby Williams, not very good, especially when you look at all the different rankings that and the play-by-play type of stuff. And Florida's defense immediately struggled the minute Shamar James got hurt and went down. Now, the defense wasn't great heading into that Georgia game before he got injured, but the defense went way downhill from there. And Florida, if you look at it overall, very deficient at linebacker. I don't know that they need all-star linebacker play for the defense to get way, way better. I think they just need to not be bad. Right, like if they can get average linebacker play, all of a sudden that sort of plugs the hole. And now the rest of your players, if they can play above average, you can have a defense that's serviceable. Whereas if you just have this one gaping hole, it doesn't matter how good your corner is if your linebacker's getting beat one-on-one against running backs continuously, right? So to me, that's probably more the purpose of the portal. And so I think, you know, we talk about needing a wide receiver to step up with Trey Wilson. Yeah, that's true. But I think more than anything, it's sort of insurance against a guy like Mizell or a guy like Burke, either not being able to step into the role or getting injured at some point along the way. Like if you think about Caleb Douglas last year getting injured right when it seemed like he was starting to pick up against Kentucky, that's what you're sort of guarding against. So I just think from the standpoint of what kind of value are you going to get in the portal in the spring? I think you got to be really careful. It's got to be either a can't miss guy who's produced someplace else. If you're projecting based on somebody who, you know, really high recruiting ranking, but didn't play that well before, I think you're probably in for a rude awakening, or at least your expectations should be set to this guy's going to sort of set our floor, but he's probably not going to make us an elite defense or an elite offense. If we bring this guy in through the portal, he's just going to be there as a depth piece to make sure things don't fall apart.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah, it's you think of Florida's transfers that have really showed out so far. Osiris Torrance was you know, putting it together at Louisiana from the get-go, stepped right in, up the competition, and upped his draft stock by coming to the SEC there. Ricky Pearsall, maybe definitely a jump at Florida, but he was still starting at Arizona State, so he was still contributing. But yeah, well, good point. It is going to be interesting the way the portal moves now and how guys can move right away. This wave of guys who have only spent 1 year at a program and going somewhere else, or guys who have even just spent a semester at a place and going somewhere else now, it's going to be something really to look out for 2 years down the road and see if, all right, if going to Will's point, if there's a high four-star, high five-star guy and they transfer right away, do they end up contributing, or was them moving a sign of things to come?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. You see, a lot of these names are in the portal. They're in the portal their second or third time. It might be with some of these guys, it's got to be a mentality thing, right? Like, we all know if people hop job to job to job, year to year to year, it's probably a sign that it might not be the boss, right? At some instances. So, you know, you got, I know Will shared the Instagram posts with Nunnery talking about the coaches. Like, yeah, okay. Was it the coaches at Houston too? It's something that I don't think when you're 19, you're looking in the mirror too much about your problems. It might be some personality conflict. I don't think every locker room's harmonious all the time. I don't think every guy in the locker room, and maybe you could have been harder on some guys when they were stuck and didn't have the ability to walk out the door. But it is a new day and age, and these guys do have the ability to go out there and have these opportunities. But at some point, I think the discussion is going to shift back to, is it good for everybody? Is it good for these guys to be able to do this? Because I do think that there needs to be some level of consistency just because of the age you're at, too. You're 18 years old. It's not great for you to probably be jumping around. You're learning a new campus. You're learning, meeting new people. It's a lot to take in. Going to college is a big thing, and I think it's a lot to take in for some people. So I don't think people consider that point of it. Whereas you saw in the past where Will talks about like an experienced player like a Joe Burrow, where you've been in college for 3 years, you got your degree from Ohio State, you're going as a grad transfer for a couple of years, and it's almost like a business trip. I think that's a different situation than when you're a sophomore and you're on your third school in 2 years.
Well, that was before crazy transfer portal, but that might be your guy there.
Well, I mean, so that is one that I hit on pretty good. But look, Burrow made it a point to call it a business year. That year they won the national championship. I think he took like a 12-credit independent study. And I'm betting that there wasn't a whole lot of studying going on with that independent study. Look, nothing would please me more than to have the transfer portal be something that really could help your team significantly, mainly because I think Florida can use that, right? I think having high-level supplemental players come in and be able to contribute would be a valuable thing to Florida. Now, I think there were some places where Florida was well below average last year, where some of the guys they've added, even if they just end up playing average, are going to be a net benefit for Florida. The problem is who you're chasing, right? I mean, you're chasing the Texases and the Georgias and the Alabamas of the world, and average probably isn't going to be enough to get the job done when you're playing those guys back to back to back to back. So, you know, look, I'd love it if the transfer portal was a place where you could go and get elite talent and turn things around right away, and, you know, that you didn't have to rely on high school talent. I'm skeptical of that. I think high school talent is still what's going to end up winning programs, going to be the staple of winning programs for years to come. And I think, you know, we always talk about recruiting rankings in terms of lottery tickets, right? That you're stacking guys one on top of another. Well, you know, then if a guy leaves who's, you know, third string, yeah, he was a high level recruit, but I don't really care because he got beat out by these other two guys who were in there. So that's the question, really. And I think this is a question we're all trying to grapple with, is the kid leaving because there's something he's not getting at the university where he has the potential to blossom into a big time player? Or is he not going to be, or is he not really going to be a big time player? And he's moving. And, you know, look, I mean, the home staff knows what a player is capable of after they've had him, even for a semester, right? And so NIL is, it's not as though it's not. So if you like where you work and someone comes and offers you more money, you usually go back to the place that you like working at and go, hey, I got this offer. Now, look, if somebody's giving you life-changing money and they say, no, we're not going to match it, yeah, I'm leaving. I mean, all of us will. Every coach in the NCAA, that's how they end up in the SEC, is they get more money to go to different places. You know, Louisiana didn't have the funds to match what Florida was willing to give Billy Napier. And that's how that works. At the same time, if you're comfortable in the program and comfortable with where you are and comfortable they're going to get you to the NFL, if they match things, then you stay. So I sort of look at it and go, if a guy leaves, you got to start asking the question of, did Florida decide not to match, or was Florida not capable of matching? Those are two different things. And really, I think the level of performance of those players as they leave probably will be an indication of which one it is.
All right, to wrap it up, one more. We brought up the position earlier. Air Force tight end Caleb Rios is a player to watch at that position. More of a blocking option at tight end if Florida decides to go that route, would be a name possibly to look out for there as well. So, all right, let's transition, guys. Spring game is on Saturday, orange and blue game, and some we've talked ad nauseum about it the last couple of days here on Gators Breakdown. But your guys' big takeaway, was it any takeaway from the game itself, or a big takeaway from all the, you know, the last 4-5 weeks of spring football?
Go first, Nick.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you cut out on my end for a second there. I missed the question.
Okay, yeah, I thought I saw you freeze up a bit. Big takeaway, whether it be from the spring game, the orange and blue game on Saturday, or just overall last 5 weeks or so of spring, do you have a big takeaway from what we saw from the Gators?
Yeah, similar to what I said earlier, I really come away from the spring feeling better about the roster, and for all the negative talk in the offseason here, this is Billy Napier's best roster since he's been in Gainesville. I think that's there's not much arguing with that one there. So I'm interested to see what the defense is. I'm going to be reserved on the defensive side. Let's see some evidence on the field. Let's see some changes. Certainly was discouraging to see some special teams issues pop up in the freaking spring game, man. Come on. Like that one was real frustrating, but I watched DJ Lagway from the first snap, and he just looked very comfortable for a true freshman. We saw the mistake he made. It was like a 3rd and 16, took a couple sacks in the game, a little bit under pressure at times. But, man, he just moves with ease. He seems to get around. He seemed to be very comfortable. That was very encouraging. Quite a different conversation about the quarterback position going into 2024 than there was going into 2023. And I think that's one thing. If you want to say, you know, what's Napier done well here in Gainesville, he's certainly put us in good position at the quarterback position going forward. But also just the running back depth, very impressive with ETN walking out the door. I think that's the first time I've said his name in 4 months. Shouldn't have done it. But he's out the door, and we have plenty of dudes at that spot. Not that I had any doubt that Treyon Webb was a good player, but it's encouraging to see the depth behind them at that position. And one of the guys that I was anxious to see last year that I was surprised didn't get some run at some point was Aiden Mizell. And we saw a couple moments with him throughout the spring game. That was certainly encouraging to see as well on the offensive side.
Guys, because it was a spring game, I don't want to make too much of it. Nick, you brought up the defense. It was 1 2.5-hour window. We didn't get to see much more outside of spring, but to me, they did. I hope I'm not. Did they see more attacking? More guys around the ball? I thought tackling was much better, and I thought some of that was due to having more guys around the ball. It was more attacking. Sharif Denson, Pup Howard, both guys seemed to be in attack mode. Aaron Gates was somebody that flashed in a replay when I was watching the replay of the spring game as well. It's just, it did seem like guys were just flying to the ball a bit more than years past. And I don't know if it's something I just want to see, you know, and I'm nitpicking, you know, it's like, oh, it was there last year too. I just don't remember seeing it. But it did jump, put it this way, it at least did jump out to me on Saturday.
It might be the want to see thing right now. Let's TBD. I'm not giving any credit.
I'm not saying it happened. I'm not saying that, but on Saturday, at least in that bubble, I at least saw it, I thought.
Well, how about that Teddy Foster clip in the drill with Wilson? That was a pop you haven't seen out of a defensive back at Florida in some time. So I like the mentality with Will Harris coming in. He seems to be a bit of a spark in the backfield there. So certainly encourage. I know Will, I'll let Will talk about the safety position. That seems to be a bit of a difference here coming into the season. But overall, it's tough to tell with the spring game because I just think there's you're kind of going live, but you're not. You can't hit some guys and everything. So it's a little difficult to tell, but it seemed like they picked it up the second half, though, for sure. I'll give them credit on that.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. I mean, so Trey Wilson got Teddy Foster back the play before the 60-yard touchdown because he just put him on skates on the play before. So, you know, it turns out when you're not in a drill where you're trying to get hit, all of a sudden it's a little bit more difficult to guard that guy. I think the defense is kind of hard because it was not ones-on-ones. You know, you're not going to – I don't think you're going to see Tarquez Bridges playing safety on the 60-yard reception. That was one where it looked like he got turned around. Though Nick and I were going back and forth about it kind of depends on what coverage was called, and it looked like quarters, but it might not have been. And it might have been more of a cover two. If it's cover two, then it's not his fault. But irrespective of that, you've got guys playing in positions that they're probably not going to be playing in when they get to the regular season, certainly not starters. I mean, you're going to have Castelli, Saturner, and DJ Douglas back there at the safety position. So I think Florida's probably a lot better. The problem, Dave, is that last year the score of the 2023 spring game was 10-7. And then we got what we got in 2023 on the defensive side of the ball. I think it's really difficult to determine what you're going to get on defense in these games just because of the way they set it up. The place where I do think you can look at, and this was maybe the thing that jumped out at me, is in the opening game last year, Florida gave up 5 sacks, and they weren't all on the offensive line, but there was one moment in particular that I remembered from that game where Florida's offensive line didn't understand how to pick up a stunt, and it caused Mertz to get hit right away. And there was a play in the spring game early on where Mertz kind of threw into coverage and Asa Turner broke up the pass. It was sort of a really kind of a bad decision. But Mertz was clean, and he was clean because the Florida defense ran a stunt and Florida's offensive line picked it up perfectly. And so I don't know that the offensive line was perfect. In fact, I think if I go back and watch the entire thing closely, I will guarantee you that starting offensive line isn't perfect. But what I'll tell you is they're way ahead of where they were last year because they didn't know how to pick that stuff up in the game against Utah, and they're already picking it up right now in the spring. So that's maybe the one thing that I would take away as a big time positive for Florida is, you know, we talked about Crenshaw Dixon coming in. We talked about Devon Emanuel coming in, George sliding to the inside. Well, is that really going to make that big of a difference? And what I would say is continuity on the offensive line last year was a problem. It's probably still going to be a problem this year from time to time. But in terms of what they showed on the field in the spring game, picking up specific things where, look, the defense was trying to trick them. And at least early on, they weren't able to do it on that particular play sort of jumps out in my mind. So I feel more confident that the offensive line is going to be a bright spot this year compared to what it was last year.
Something I was going to ask, Nick did bring it up a little bit, but Q Lee, of course, longtime listener who joins us in the chat for most of the live episodes we have, ETN who? Are we going to be asking ourselves that in the fall? I mean, Jaden Ball, man, I tell you what, man, we had heard, you know, and it was not overstating. It might be Jaden Ball one spring practice. It might be Kanan Daniels the next spring practice. But we did hear behind the scenes a bit that these two freshman running backs were, you know, were showing up, were contributing early on. We saw Trevor Etienne do it as a freshman. Based off of that, and then based off of what we saw Saturday, I'm not going to be surprised one bit if, you know, in some ways we're saying that. Now, Etienne brought a lot of value to this team last year, so I don't want to, you know, shun him of that just because of where he went. You know, he was a big-time contributor for this team, but at the same time, Florida could just I won't say easily replace him, but I mean, it could, but by the time the season rolls around, from what I saw from Jaden Ball, and we were hearing from Kanan Daniels, Jacoby Jackson has some nice runs as well. I mean, Florida has a stable of backs.
I think we'll fill RB2 spot nicely this year, so that'll be nice and replaceable there. But I do think that one of the guys I was very interested in seeing last year was Cam Carroll, and he's working his way back from injury still. So you have another name to throw in the pile there. So yep, that might even be a spot you see a transfer because it's just embarrassment of riches back there. There's certainly some good backs back there. The real thing that that he who shall not be named brought to the room is that real explosive element, that guy who's going to break off that 60-yard run. Do we have that guy? I think every Gator fan knows that Montrell can carry the ball and be a damn good running back throughout the season. But is he going to be that guy? Who's going to be the explosive weapon outside of Wilson on that offense? That's really getting that second player, third option, if you can go in the portal and get somebody. That's going to be something that's important for this offense to answer.
I look at it and I said, Derrick Henry was the last running back to win the Heisman Trophy. Before that was Mark Ingram. Before that was Reggie Bush. And then before that was Ron Dayne. Like that's how far back you're going for Heisman Trophy level running backs. Now, look, I mean, that doesn't mean running backs don't bring value, but it's an indication of what football has become, both the pro level and the college level, that it's just quarterback, 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 quarterback. And every once in a while, there's not a clear quarterback, so they give it to a wide receiver, or they give it to somebody like Charles Woodson who can do it on both sides. But the reality is that this is a quarterback-driven sport. It's a quarterback-driven league. And so you can get away with running backs who are good but not great. Now, last year, Florida – on offense needed that explosive weapon. If Graham Mertz can take a step forward, or if DJ Lagway wins the job, and all of a sudden you've got a quarterback who's playing at a high clip, I think you miss the running back considerably less. I think obviously if Wilson is getting double covered and nobody else steps up, well, now you start to miss that explosion at the running back. So in many ways, I think it's just a sign of the times that, yeah, I mean, look, you want the best players you can get on any particular team at any time, but the drop-off from he who shall not be named to Montrell Johnson is relatively small. It's possible these other guys might be just as good. And even so, a small drop-off at that position, probably not a killer, assuming that everybody else takes a step forward. Now, that's a big assumption, but that's what needs to happen. And that needed to happen whether Etienne stayed or not, is the reality, is they need a jump from another wide receiver. They need a jump from Graham Mertz in order for this offense to do anything that's going to enable them to compete in the last five games of the year this year. And that's what we should be looking for. And, you know, running back is sort of, we'll be able to get what we need to get out of that. It's not like they're one injury away from having a true freshman back there who doesn't know pass protection. They got guys who've been in the system for a while and will be able to make sure that things run smoothly.
Now, guys, let's end it with this. Coming out of spring, it may have been the position to start with as well. Biggest area of concern right now with this team. It'd be position group. But probably the easiest way to do it, and I think we can still say defense till we actually see that side of the ball improve. But if we want to zoom it in a little bit, is there a position group you still have a concern about coming out of spring ball? Will, that face. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, go ahead, Will.
No. Nick, you go first. I'll say mine.
I did tell Will before the offseason, Dave, I said, we can't say it can't get worse on defense anymore. No no saying that. We said that the last 2 years. I'm not going to let you say that at all this offseason. So, again, like with the defensive side, until I see it, I'm not going to believe it. Let's see it. Certainly, it seems like they've got some talent there. Certainly, it seems like there's some guys that can step up. I like the young players. I like the addition of a Pup Howard, for example. I think that there are reasons for optimism for the thing trending in the right direction on the defensive side of the ball. I do worry, like I said, I think we're shallow at some positions. I'm going to stick with the tackle spot. Barber is such a key to keep him healthy. I think keeping Barber healthy, Crenshaw, Dixon, if you can guarantee me that those two can stay healthy the whole season, I'd sign up for that in a heartbeat. But a guy like Cam Jackson up the middle also is just that the interior on the defense and that those offensive tackles are just crucial for this team. If those guys can stay healthy and active and have good seasons, I think that would be a real good sign for the Gators.
Yeah, Barber, he did mention last week, he talked to the media. He said he played injured most of last year. Mm-hmm. And look, he probably did have a drop off moving from the right side to the left side last year, but there is some continuity there. And if what he's saying is true and it held him back last year, hopefully there's another step for him, because he can play better as well, going to that spot. There's still a competition between him and Emmanuel, I would believe, on that left side. So we'll get around to summer camp, and, you know, that should be good for the Gators, whoever comes out of that competition and starting at left tackle. So, Will, can I guess where you're going to go?
You can guess, but I don't think you're going to get it.
Quarterback.
Ah, you did guess where I was going to go. I didn't know where I was going to go. So it's funny because I think Graham Mertz wins 10 or 11 games if he's surrounded by Michigan's roster last year. I think he exceeded everybody's expectations in 2023. I think that's a credit to him. I don't see another jump. I just don't see it, given the stats, given sort of the history at Wisconsin. Maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But Pro Football Focus had his ranking last year at 75.8. It's pretty good. But the quarterback rankings for LSU was 94.7, Georgia was 91.5, Ole Miss was 91.2, Alabama 88.7, A&M, even with some of the struggles they had, 85.3. What that meant was Florida's success rate on passing downs was 8th in the SEC at 31%. That's below average. And that wouldn't be a huge issue if they were hitting explosive plays, but Mertz's average depth of target was like 6.4 yards downfield. So Florida wasn't explosive down the field. And a lot of that 72 or 71% completion percentage was screens, checkdowns, those sorts of things. They've talked about pushing the ball down the field, but do we have the personnel to push the ball down the field? And are we going to let it go? Right? Is Graham Mertz going to let it go? And there's going to have to be a risk associated with that, right? Like, interception avoidance is a skill, but it's only a skill if you're pushing the ball down the field. If you're avoiding interceptions because you check down all the time, then that becomes an issue. So look, Florida's offense, I mean, Nick, you brought it up, right? Like, you're not going to say the defense can't get worse until we see the defense play better. You got to offset that somewhere. And I think the place you got to offset it is on the offense. And if you're limited at the quarterback position, you're limited in terms of how high you can go. And so again, it's not a question of, can Florida's offense be 40th in the country? It's a question of, can it be 5th? Because I think that's what you're going to need given the schedule and given how far the defense has to come. And I don't know that they have the ability to get to that point.
Yeah. I think many of us said, you know, there's gotta be a jump there. Now I wouldn't know if I don't know if I'd say a concern, but I can see it, you know, especially with your point. If the defense doesn't get better, if wide receiver is still an issue and you're having to put more on Graham Mertz, you know, hopefully there's a running game there that he can lean on a bit more. But I mean, with this schedule coming, Florida's going to have to be more explosive. No doubt about it. There's going to be some games, even with a better defense, they're going to be in some shootouts. They're going to be some 30, 40 point games. They're going to find themselves in where there's going to have to be some down the field passes, and not just one to make us all happy. I mean, there's going to have to be 2-3 in a game to just keep up with the opposing offense. Those offenses you mentioned, Will, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, they're on the other sideline next year. So you expect those games to be heavy, high scoring just to keep up. Even if your defense takes a step, you're going to find yourselves because of those offenses in some quote unquote shootouts.
Well, that's the thing. If Florida had a McElwain defense from 2015 and Graham Mertz at quarterback, I would say something completely different because I would feel like that would be sufficient for what they're trying to do. But you need someone who's going to be a difference maker. And to be honest, the only – I think it was top – I looked at this earlier this year. So I think it was top 20 offenses in the SEC. So top 20 in the country from the SEC. The only team that didn't have a Pro Football Focus ranking over, I think, 89 was Tennessee. And that, I think, is actually a testament to Josh Heupel and what he's able to do with his scheme and the fact that the scheme is so unique within the organization. It's also why none of those guys make it to the pros. But the point is that elite quarterback play is what drives the needle, what pushes the needle. It's not rocket science, but you can actually see it in the stats. Like, when you start looking at the overall individual play of the different players, you can sit there and go, yeah, that's a top 20 offense. Yeah, that offense probably ranked like 40th. Yeah, that offense probably ranked like 70th. Oh yeah, there's Vanderbilt. And you know, you can sort of see that the whole way through, and you just predict based on quarterback performance. So it's not a matter of like that I dislike Graham Mertz and what he can do. It's that, you know, we've talked all episode about loading up on guys in that junior and senior year because you need that experience. Well, they also have to produce in some capacity as well, not just have experience. And that's going to be the challenge for Mertz is, you know, maybe he proves me wrong. I hope he proves me wrong. But, you know, Burrow is a great example of somebody who had a really good profile, came in and struggled, was sort of average his first year at LSU, and then took a jump. I think we all sort of look at Mertz and say he took a jump last year. it's rare to see two jumps in a row. Maybe Jaden Daniels is the guy you'd look at and said took two jumps in a row from his time at Arizona State to LSU year one, year two. I hope it's there. I just, given what I saw in the spring game, I'm not convinced that that it is.
I'd say like a Jalen Hurts going from Bama to Oklahoma is a little interesting too, because you know, the whole thing at Bama was, yeah, he's good, but is he Tua good? Is he at that level? I think he went to Oklahoma and lit it up. The difference with an example like that or like a Joe Burrow is those guys did not have the 3 years on tape that Graham Mertz had at Wisconsin. So if Mertz does take that jump and he does truly become an elite quarterback in the SEC this year, man, what a marketing tool for Billy Napier on the recruiting trail with quarterback. He already seems like he's doing okay recruiting quarterbacks, but that would be a huge, huge win for Billy Napier if Mertz really took that next jump this year.
I mean, we kind of saw it play out. You know, a certain level of quarterback play that you probably had to have. Now, Mertz isn't going to be Daniels because of the lack of running ability. It's just not. But that type of play to make up for a terrible defense. I mean, LSU's defense was just as bad as Florida's in many, many ways last year. Still only lost three games, you know, just because of what they were able to do at the quarterback spot. So that just lets you know how much it can elevate a team and how much it can carry a team. You know, if Florida's going to improve, you know, it probably will need some jump from the defense and some jump for Graham Mertz. I mean, if you want to way overcome expectations, it's going to take a jump from both there. But yeah, then Will, for I just knew somehow you were gonna go there. You were gonna go.
Well, I mean, I obviously am not a fan of the defensive coordinator either, so that's probably the other place that I was going to go. That is something that worries me in terms of you've got two voices within that room and how that's going to work and how that's going to meld together. And again, maybe it works great. And you know, what did they say that Armstrong was calling Colin Roberts? He was calling him like his football dad or something like that. I don't remember what it was during the broadcast. They said something specific, like, you know, in terms of him using Roberts as a mentor. Hopefully that's the case. But you know, we saw at the quarterback position with Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson a couple of years ago, where if you've got two quarterbacks, you don't have any. And I worry that same thing applies for special teams coach, for defensive coordinator, and maybe even at quarterback, depending upon how things go early on the season.
What do we need to see on special teams in the first game or two to make a change at the special teams coordinator position there, Dave?
I mean, the change is supposed to already be made. So we'll see. Maybe jokingly. No quote unquote unique situations. You know, we heard that a few times last year.
Not entertained?
Yeah, there we go.
Never a dull moment.
Hey, man, I do like the fact that Mizell looked to be on kickoff returns. Hopefully that turns out to have some explosion there to help out this offense we're talking about. Trace Mack looked good. I hope he doesn't get hurt because that's gonna be tough if Trace Mack goes down.
Might need a different backup. It'll be interesting. I saw Hawkins return a couple of kicks.
Yeah.
He's certainly got some jets, so it'd be nice to see. It'd be nice to get some real field position advantage. It felt like Florida was always behind the sticks last year. Some of that because they didn't get turnovers, but some of that just because, you know, they would bring the ball out from the end zone on kickoffs and be sitting at the 18-yard line, or worse, if they got like a holding or a block in the back penalty and be starting at the 8-yard line. It just never felt like Florida was starting at midfield. And at least the year before, ETM was able to get the ball out to, you know, the 35, 40, 45 yard line a few times. It just didn't feel like that happened at all last year.
Yeah, there we go. Good look at spring practice. But yeah, special teams, I know people kind of wanted to throw everything away when they saw 10 guys on an extra point block. But
it's pretty rough. That's pretty rough.
We'll stick on special team Spinal Tap. It goes to 11. Like, get it to 11. Come on.
Never dull moment on special teams.
That's what I want to see, man. Just 11 guys. Like, all the different numbers.
All right, guys. Good stuff. Read reaction right here. I don't know. Would putting a percentage on where the magazine is right now be... As we discussed earlier, just transfer portal kind of throwing a wrench in everything.
That's not even a joke. Yeah, it really is, because there's some articles that I want to wrap up that I am waiting to wrap up until we kind of get the feel of things. And obviously, that's the one thing with the magazine anyway, is there is going to be some information that's out of date quickly in this transfer portal era at times. But we'll have most of it in the right spot by the time we send it off to the presses and get it out to people.
Yeah. So launch date's May 15th. So we're still a month out. We're still good. Yeah. And the reality is, the funny part is the writing comes pretty quick. It's the research that takes a long time. Mm-hmm. So getting all the stats together, trying to piece together what the story is going to be from the stats. Cause what we don't want to do is just put a bunch of charts on there. Right. Yeah. We want to actually have like a conclusion drawn from the evidence that says, hey, and really, I think the big thing that we're trying to do with this year's magazine is take all the stuff that the haters are saying. And in some cases we may go, yeah, they're kind of right. Maybe switch to a different topic. But in other cases go, no, here's what you throw back at the Georgia fan who's barking at you at the water cooler when they throw something out there. Here's something that you can say back to them. So that's sort of the goal, is to be able to give good information that you'll be able to use with people that you're arguing with this offseason.
Good stuff. I know. I look forward to it. In the last 2 years you guys have done it, so some good stuff. Good stuff on the way.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Any work you guys got? Stand Up and Holler coming out this week on the.
I think we'll record it now.
Oh. Yeah, we got that, and then I didn't get my spring recap up yet, so that's going to be going up tonight. Okay. Too, if I have time, because there's some interesting stuff in there that I think I saw in the film that hopefully people enjoy seeing some examples of the stuff that. There've been a lot of people who sort of put recaps together. I don't think any of them are inaccurate, but. But I always like looking at the film and saying, here's what I saw. So we'll do that this week.
So that means Dave shut up so they can get to work. we were going by the hour anyway. So that will do it for this episode of Gators Breakdown. Will and Nick there, guys. Check them out. ReadReaction.com on YouTube. Read Reaction as well. Stand Up and Holler going on there. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on social media at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thank you for joining us on this episode of Gators Breakdown.